Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, March 25th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 271. I have a super special guest, film critic, YouTube host of the ATZ show, Arturo Zurita. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit right now. I'm going to talk to you for a little bit. I'm in here recording this intro and I'm in my apartment. I need to clean it up. I did pretty good earlier this year keeping it clean, and now it's just been total savagery, so I need to get that taken care of. But I kind of want to go to the movies. I kind of want to go see that new Steven Soderbergh joint, Unsane, that he shot on his iPhone. He shot it on an iPhone, and how things are going to change because he shot his film on an iPhone. You know, like, you get one of those. Even though he used the most expensive iPhone equipment that you can use when you're shooting with one of those things. But it looks like it's going to be pretty interesting. I'm sure you get these interesting angles. I just watched Matthew Cherry's film that he did a couple years ago called Nine Rides, starring Dorian Missick. It's about this Uber driver in L.A., I believe. And it takes place during New Year's Eve and the nine rides that he takes to their destinations and their stories. So it was pretty interesting. And it was like 99 cent on Amazon. So Amazon Video. So it was pretty cool. That was neat. They had some cool angles and whatnot on that jump. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of want to do that. I kind of want to do that and go to this new taco place. I've had a hard, there's one Mexican place that I know that's good in like my area. And I saw this, R&B singer that I follow on Instagram who lives in North Jersey. And she, like, not only is she like, what's her name? 'Cause she is good. She's not just a pretty face. So I'm going to shout her out. 'Cause I listened to her, SoundCloud page. I think she goes by, so her Instagram name is Now I'm Yella, and she has a Bandcamp page, and I think she has like a YouTube channel that she just showed, like, there's this one video where and she, her latest post as I'm recording right now, she is at this, she says, Saturdays are perfect for tacos at Los Guerreros Authentic. So this is like a chain, and at least like the, it's at least around northern New Jersey. And she's like posting it. And I think this is like her third or at least her second post that I've seen. Yeah, like she's got like she's got two posts. I was like, okay, if this girl is going here all these times, I got to at least check it out. So it seems like it's going to be like, it seems like it's going to be good. So I have to check that place out. And she's really dope. So now I'm Yella on Instagram, NOWIMYELLA. She's good. She's got some good tunes. I just happened, if I was a go, you know how you just, you guys like, oh, she's cute, I'll follow her or whatever. And I just stumbled on her page where she had this, she's harmonizing to a song. I was like, oh, she's good. So there you go. Now I'm Yella. Jazzy NJ.bandcamp.com. So there you go. That's a recommendation for you. Music recommendation. So shows, I got a show this week, the double platinum comedy show at this, where the hell is it? It's in Morristown. It's at South Street Social, which was formerly Sona 13 in Morristown, New Jersey. That's at 8 o'clock on this Thursday, March 29th. Headlining that show. It's going to be fun. Another show I'm doing, Comedy School Dropout, on April 4th. At the Beauty Bar in New York City, Chelsea area, like 14th and 1st-ish. Big show, Thursday, April 5th at Steel Stacks. I'm doing the 2 Laugh Minimum show, headlining that. Darren Patterson's going to be opening. Should be a good time. So come to that, you guys. It's going to be fun. If you live in any of those areas, come see me. What else? Pretty good week. TPS reports at the day job. Had a couple auditions that I feel good about them. There's two that I think like I might have a shot. You always have a shot when you get an audition, but you never know. You never know what the powers that be are going to think, but you kind of got to do them and just forget about them. If there's any young actors, listening to me, And if you can take anything from this podcast, if you want some advice, just do them, prepare, do your best, and do the audition and forget about them. But some of them are hard, though. Some of them, like, it's a big TV show and you think, like, I need to get this. It's funny, like, I was on set a couple of weeks ago. I was working on this pilot for NBC. And I was in a scene with the lead actor and we were just talking and we were waiting we were just waiting for them to set up the next scene and whatnot. And he was saying, we were just talking. I was telling him about my life. He was telling me about his, and he was like, yeah, it's good. You're a comic. You do stand up and you act and you have a job. That's really cool. Cause you don't want to go into these auditions like feeling desperate, cause they can read it on you. The casting directors can read that urgency and that desperation. I remember going into it's a place in New York City called Ripley Greer Studios where you can rent out rooms. Some casting agencies, like if they're from out of town, they'll rent these rooms and they'll have auditions all day. You can practice there. It's like rehearsal space. You can film stuff in there, rehearse all this cool stuff. Interesting. But like when they have auditions, you could just feel the desperation on some of these young people that come in and like they're singing, and it's beautifully sad in a way. I don't know. It's really weird when I was younger, I was thinking about that, and like, cause you don't want to go into the auditions like I need to get this. I need to book this. And I think I had a lot of that on me when I was younger. Now that I look back, I would be thinking that way. Like, you just want to, cause you want to prove yourself, and it's obvious you still want, and I still want to do that in my late 30s. But I think I have a sense of, the better sense of myself. I kind of know who I am a lot more than I did back then. And I'm more confident in what I can do. So it's not like, it's not even being like a dick where it's just like, I can do the job. I think I'm right for it. This is what I have to offer, and I'm malleable. I'm easy to work with and whatnot. But you have to do it and forget about it. And I was talking to my parents after one of the auditions. I had like auditioned for one line in a movie, and I was telling them that same story about being on that, working on that pilot. And my mom laughed and she was like, maybe you kind of had that when you were young. And I was like, yeah, probably. I probably did. And she was like making fun of me, ribbing me a little bit. And I was like, yeah, I probably did feel that way, you know, because now when I get the audition, I do get the sides from my manager and I look at it, you know, this is where you got to be. This is where all the logistics. And I do the audition and I go to the email and I just like check it off. Like, so I don't have to see it anymore. But I'll admit, though, some are hard. Like, some's hard when it's like, when it's a big show, a show that you watch and you actually like, and you're just like, oh my God, this would be amazing. You do have to, you just have to let things go. And it can be hard. But now now that I'm older, I look at these things like that would be dope. This would be a good opportunity. And I just look at it, I'm like, that could be a good look, young. That would be a good look. I don't look at it as this could be life changing. Some of them are. Like, I had one a couple weeks ago that was like, yo, if I got that shit, that would be fucking huge. I still think about it sometimes, but you can't let that that just ruins your process when you think that way. But anyway, shout out to all the young people who did the March for Your Life yesterday. That was awesome. That was great to see that. Especially the kid, Naomi Wadler. I don't know where she's from. I don't know if she's from, I don't know where this girl's from, but she's an 11-year-old, and she spoke about the black women and girls who don't make the front page. They get murdered and are affected by gun violence. And she was a representation of those black women. And it was fucking great. I don't know. Like, if when I was 11 years old, I mean, I was playing Genesis and Nintendo. I kind of could tie my shoes. And to get up there and speak in front of 500,000 people, all those kids, that was amazing. That was really cool. Maybe there will be a change, man. Maybe these kids will change. And you think about, like, it's easy to be negative about it. And I struggle with this when the Parkland shooting happened. Like, it was obviously fucking terrible. Then there was one in Maryland, in Southern Maryland last week. I felt bad that, you know, that happened. And then the way that the media reacted, and then the way that, like, they were just like, oh, they're having a town hall meeting and they're doing this and XYZ. And I know a lot of black people were in their feelings, and I was like, man, they doing this. Cause I said to a friend, like, man, they're killing all these black people and they really don't do anything. And they have the, you know, when they march and protest, they got the fucking army ready to like throw tear gas at these black people when stuff like that happens. And when we react to them killing us, and, you know, they killed another guy, Stephon Clark in Sacramento, a father of two in his backyard, saying somebody, it's reported a robbery, is black dudes in his backyard minding his fucking business, and then these cops roll up on him and shoot him. And you know, people, we're upset about that shit. And then to see there's just no, what it seems like has been happening, there's just no, it takes, there's so many steps and hurdles for white people to go through, for some, to see our humanity. When we regularly do this on a daily basis, whether it's art, whether it's through things that happen around the country where people are being affected, we don't have to, black people and other minorities don't have to jump through all those hoops to see it. Like, that's a human being. It's fucked up what happened to that person. What are we going to do to fix this? And so I totally empathize with, because I felt it. I empathize with everybody that was in their feelings Saturday morning when all this was taking place. Like, Robert Kraft donated his Patriots plane to fly kids to the march and stuff. Also, and people were mad about that. And, you know, you get mad and people would, you know, they're donating money to Trump and Colin Kaepernick don't have no job. And Johnny Manziel, people are giving him looks after all the shit. Like, Johnny Manziel is the Shia LaBeouf of the NFL. Like, he keeps getting these opportunities. I don't even know if that's the right way, because Shia LaBeouf actually does have talent. But anyway, he's just like a I know you. Everybody knows, if you listen to this show and you know about sports, you know Johnny Manziel is. You know his history, like history of like beating up his girlfriend and having all this drama. Now he's, you know, he's saying he's got mental illness and he's looking into that. But he's getting opportunities. Like, people are looking at him. He's not as good as Colin Kaepernick, because we know what it is, and it's just like Colin Kaepernick is black, and he's even though he's biracial, he's black, and he stood up for himself. And that's why he don't have no job. And we know this, and we know, and we see that, you know, I guess scouts people are looking at Johnny Manziel, and Johnny Manziel came out on Twitter and said he stands with Kaepernick and all of this stuff. And I put it on Twitter, like, do we invite him to the cookout? And people was like, yeah. Some people were like, yeah. Some people were like, no, because he hit his girl and all of this stuff. But all of that stuff is in the gumbo of mistreatment that black people have faced, have continuously faced in this country. Since we've been on this continent, we faced that shit, and I don't see an end to it. But that's a part of it. So I definitely empathize with everybody that was in their feelings, that continues to be in there, and rightfully so. But you can't discount the youth of America for taking a stand. I don't know if I was that age, would I be doing that? I don't know. It's because that's hard. Like, there's one girl, like, threw up. She was talking and she threw up in front of all these people, and she continued her speech. That kid, Emma Gonzalez, who did her speech, and then she stood in silence for like 6 minutes and 20 seconds and made it, people were feeling kind of awkward about that. And she knew what she was doing, and she stood up, and she, all that stuff, man, it was a beautiful thing. But I can't talk about that without, you know, addressing the fact that, you know, all this stuff continues to happen to black people like every fucking day. But on a lighter note, I had a really nice Saturday night, a very pleasant and delightful Saturday night. I went to a literary salon at this place called Easton's Nook in Newark, New Jersey. And it's a place where it was named after Zerish Mattis Easton. I'm going to read this. A social worker whose life was spent engaging in extraordinary acts of love and care, from organizing community-based programs for families to financing GED programs out of pocket to taking time to helping clients and community members to learn to read and write after work. She managed to find ways of seeking out and lifting up that which was most graceful and dignified in every child and adult she met. The Nook is that special place in the house where she would sit cross-legged at sunrise to pray, meditate, and write as an entry to her day. So this was a woman whose home was in Newark, and she was basically, I don't know, like the Mother Teresa of Newark, in a way. She her daughters who run the building, who run the home, they were talking about her mother and their mother, and when she passed away, like, there were a lot of people that came up to them and say, "Your mom paid for me, put me through school. Your mom got me my first suit so I could get a job." Like, all the wonderful things this woman did for the community, and they turned it into a home where writers can go on retreat and work on their craft, have conferences and meetings and all this place. So it's just like a place where artists can get together and have communal activities and whatnot. And I was invited by the homie, Darren Patterson. His wife, Kim Joy Ukwu, wrote a book of short stories called Locked Gray, Linked Blue. And she did a reading of her work. And she was also there with John Terry Gadsden, who wrote this collection of poems called Blues Triumphant. And I went there, and it was a fucking great night. It was so awesome to have listened to these women, you know, share their work with us. And you know, like I looked up the place, like when I was trying to figure out how to get there and whatnot, I looked up the place. Oh, and they say, oh, we'll have refreshments and everything like that. I was like, oh, cool. So we get there and we're hanging out. We're talking. I'm getting introduced to everybody there. And it's, oh, it's time to eat. You know, you have, they had a nice spread. That food was amazing. That food was really good. They had barbecue chicken. They had like these little smoked chicken wings. They had they had pasta. They had shrimp. I don't even know what that shrimp dish was, but it was great. And they had rice. It was just awesome. And they were like, oh, we got more. Make sure you eat up. And I was like, we're going to fall asleep if we keep eating. And I never thought that I would be at such a classy event, like licking my fingers. I couldn't help it. I wasn't being ghetto or anything, but I even said that. I was like, yo, I can't. Like, I never thought I would be at a place like this, like licking my finger. Like, the food was good. Like, you had to do, you know, you had to do that. And it was great. And it was shout out to the homie Darren Patterson for inviting me. That was a nice night, because I would have just been at home, like falling asleep on Netflix or something on YouTube. So it was cool. And there was one of the authors. Sons was there, and he had a Nintendo Switch, and I was looking at him play. And I didn't want to be a creep, but I was just like asking him about it, because everybody's like, "You got to get a Nintendo Switch. You got to get a Nintendo Switch." Like it's a cult or something. Like there's the cult of MoviePass, which I mean, now it's like $6.95 to join, $6.95 a month. That's like, I don't know, the bubble might burst on that. I talked to Arturo about that a little bit, but I mean, if you get in where you can fit in, like while you can, like get in on it. And I was watching him play Zelda. That looks amazing. But I didn't want to, I looked at him play for like a minute or so. Like I didn't want to be like a creepy old guy watching a high school kid play. Zelda, but it looked great from what I saw. It looks pretty awesome, but I just don't think I have time for all that. It looks awesome. So let's get to Arturo Zurita. Now, Arturo, I found out it, but I've been following this guy. I have to been following his work for like at least over a year or so now. And I really enjoy his YouTube channel. The way that he breaks down film and pop culture stuff is really cool, but mainly like the film stuff that he does. And I what put me over the edge of wanting to get him on was his review of Annihilation, his explanation, his theories about it, just his whole breakdown. It's like an 18-minute clip. So I really liked Annihilation, and I've talked about the movie for like 3 weeks now. So because now more people are starting to see it, and more people are having, and people will text me about it. And say, yo, I saw Annihilation. I don't know, man. It was interesting, but I don't know. And I didn't say anything to him. I just texted them back the link to his YouTube clip on it. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So I really enjoy this guy, and I reached out to him, and he was kind enough to spend some time with me. And we were on a bit of a time crunch, so we're definitely going to have him back. But we ended up having a great conversation. And so without further ado, here is my conversation with Arturo Zurita of the ATZ Show. Enjoy it, folks. So what neighborhood in Chicago do you live in? What area?
I live in the west suburbs. So like any time that there's any big screenings, got to make it all the way to the city. And the screenings always end up being like at 7.
Yeah.
And you got to be there an hour early. Okay. And to be there an hour early, you got to leave at 4, and that's traffic time.
Oh man, I don't know if you can say what town, but I don't want people to stop you.
Yeah, I've had some people who've been trying to like find me and stuff. Big fans.
Well, we won't do that. That's
it's cool. But I do say Chicago because I do like meeting up with people whenever we go to screenings and stuff like that. But I know that there's film fans can get kind of like you didn't like this movie? Oh, how dare you? The last thing I needed, someone knocking on my door like The Strangers.
Oh, yeah.
But
there was one weird movie. I can't think of the name of it, but I couldn't sleep one night, and it was some movie. Maybe I'll find it by the time this is over. But there's this one movie about this kid who had like a YouTube Twitch channel, and he was really popular, and this one girl like found him and stalked him, and it was just like,
holy smokes.
It was really crazy. It's not that great of a movie, but it was entertaining. Yeah. but it was just, it was entertaining enough at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
When I went to grad school out there at Roosevelt University in the Loop.
Oh, dope.
And I lived in Wrigleyville, and I love Chicago. It's a great city.
I need
to go back and do some shows. So you went to Sundance this year?
Yes, sir.
How was that?
Man, anyone who's listening who's a movie fan, that is the place to go. I've been there two years already, and it's like become like if I need to not go on vacation or splurge or anything for the entire year, I am fine with that as long as I have enough money for Sundance every year. I want to make that thing a tradition. It's fantastic. The environment, mm-hmm. the snow, the movies, the culture, everyone there, like the whole town itself in Salt Lake and Park City, they're aware that there's a bunch of strangers coming in, mm-hmm. and they're welcoming. Maybe it's the Mormon attitude. I don't know what they have over there, but they're the nice people.
Yeah. And is it hard to like put yourself up, like make reservations? Do you have like sponsorship? What are you doing to get there? Like, what is it?
Well, for myself, I've paid for it. I've saved up for it. I do want to get like a press thing. Mm-hmm. I've never tried to get a press thing, but I know some people who have gotten press. So that's kind of what I want to aim for next year. So I highly recommend anyone who loves movies, mm-hmm. do follow that same path. Just talk about movies, build yourself an audience, and then maybe you can get a press thing. But I just book everything myself. So it does get pretty expensive.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. It's difficult whenever a movie gets a lot of hype and you want to get tickets for that, you sure. know,
yeah.
It's like trying to get tickets to a sold out Showtime. But yeah, it's just about the farther you live, the more flight tickets are going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
If you're there for a week, that's more nights at a hotel or Airbnb. And yeah, it's $20 to see a movie over there because you're obviously seeing it super early. But it's a cool experience. You're sitting there. No one has seen a trailer. There's like one picture of the movie, one little line about what it's about, and you're there experiencing it for the first time with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you don't even know if you're watching the next Oscar nominated movie, or sometimes you're watching a movie no one's ever going to see again because it doesn't get picked up.
what did you like, just for the listeners who haven't watched your YouTube channel yet?
Gotcha.
What did you come away with really excited about? What films? Give us a couple.
Yeah.
That you liked.
So I'll give you the little sampler package. For those horror fans, there's a movie called Hereditary. I've been talking about this movie like crazy. This is the movie for you guys. If you are a horror fan, this is your number one. Just put it as your number one already. If you're not a horror fan, this one I believe is going to get to you. Like, this is just craftsmanship to the core. I don't know if you're aware of A24, the studio A24.
I'm an A24 stan.
Dude, they picked it up. The moment they picked it up, that's when I knew this is going to be a fantastic movie. Saw it, can confirm that this is going to be one of the best movies of the year. And for horror fans, like, whew, I'm jealous for horror fans.
I did see that trailer yesterday when I went to go see Thoroughbreds, which to me, have you seen that yet, Thoroughbreds?
I caught Thoroughbreds at Sundance 2 years ago.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it came out finally.
I really like that one. That was really good. And they showed that trailer before mm-hmm. the movie, and I was like, okay, this is gonna be interesting.
Ooh, yeah, you don't even know. Man, they don't show you anything in that. The way that I've been pitching it, I'm like, you know when a scary movie's got that one scene that everyone then talks about, like that one thing that really had everyone jumping from their seats?
Mm-hmm.
This movie has four of those.
Okay.
Four.
Wow. Jesus. Now, go ahead.
Well, I guess the other ones just to mention, Search, I think, is a movie if you're not big into the scares. Search is a movie that for whatever reason doesn't have a poster, doesn't have a trailer or anything, but it all takes place in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars John Cho. Some of you may know him from Star Trek. Others may know him from Harold and Kumar.
Columbus, but, the best movie. One of the best movies of 2017.
So you saw Columbus.
Dude, this is one of the, this is why I said, like, I got to talk to this guy. Because you were one of the few people that just people in general, anybody, a person with a heartbeat that was like, oh, I like Columbus.
Uh-huh.
And you happen to be a person of color. I was like, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Columbus was dope. That was one that I saw at Sundance 2 years ago. I was like, ah, let's just give this one a chance. I'm mesmerized, man.
Now I've nerded out about it. So I want someone else. I want you to just kind of take the stage and talk about how much you liked it.
Oh, for sure. First of all, Haley Lou Richards, the girl in the movie,
mm-hmm.
cutest can be. Holy yes. smokes.
Yeah.
Such a crush on this chick right
yeah.
here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting watching the movie with my girlfriend. My girlfriend's like, it's fine. That girl's adorable. and then John Cho as well. This man's been he's been around for a while, but he's just even more on the come up with Columbus. Like I said, Search.
Yeah.
But what really piqued my interest with this movie was for those of you who haven't seen it, watch it. For those of you who don't know, it's directed by a dude named Kogonada. Mm-hmm. He's a Korean director, but he's also a Korean film video essayer.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a channel on Vimeo and he pretty much just dissects other movies. So obviously for someone like myself who dissects movies, seeing that person make a movie and release it at Sundance and it be that good
yeah.
is such a huge inspiration. So I was like, yo, this is crazy. I gotta go support, you know, film fans who were making it big.
Yeah.
The movie itself, I mean, you've seen it. It is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's nothing. I don't want to say it's like nothing I've ever seen, but it's just like it was these beautiful shot compositions
mm-hmm.
and this life happening within those frames. And he like just sometimes he doesn't even it's like a scene can just take place in a whole master shot.
Right.
You get it. And like there like a moment where I guess that moment, I think it's where they're at the bank or something. And she's explaining to John Cho, like, oh, this is this building and this is blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no.
Yeah.
He's like, no, tell me how you really feel about it. And
then yes.
he just took the sound out.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, fuck, this is so good. And it was just like, I nerded out about that because, like, I tried to get some of my friends to go. I tried to get one of my homegirls to go, and I showed her the trailer. I was like, this is what I'm going to see. You want me to get you a ticket? And mm-hmm. she's like, this is boring. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
But I went by myself, and I went to – it was playing at the IFC Center in New York City. And mm-hmm. they did a talk back, and Kogonada was there. Haley Lou Richardson was there. And it's Rory Culkin was in it, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and they were all...
Where's the library?
Yeah, they all did the talk back. I just thought it was beautiful. And, like, that movie and Coco, also Get Out, obviously, but
mm-hmm.
those were my favorites. But Coco just floored me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you mentioned Columbus. So I mentioned it, and you got excited. So I don't feel like a total...
Nah, dude, I'm all for it. Weirdo. I wish more people gave it a chance.
I guess it came out as an iTunes exclusive with.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, so I got that. I bought it and it's on Amazon Prime, but I mm-hmm. want that. I still want that tactile feeling getting the Blu-ray. And,
right.
And they don't know, like, they didn't say when that was going to happen. So.
Yeah, that's what sucks about them. It's like you release the movie, but it's so difficult. Mm-hmm. Like with Best Buy and Target, they just announced that they're not going to sell CDs anymore.
Yeah,
and it's like, shoot, when are they going to do that to DVDs and Blu-rays?
I used to work at Best Buy on when I was living in Chicago. It was
uh-huh.
the one on North and Clybourne.
Gotcha.
And I used to work there, and I used to get all these DVDs and stuff, get the hookup. But now, and I went in there 2 weeks ago to get Coco, the limited edition, comes mm-hmm. like in a steel book or whatever.
That was the best.
Yeah. It was a ghost town. Like there was
right?
nobody there. It's nothing. They say what people do is like they'll go to the store and people like they'll go to the store and take pictures of the stuff that they want and then go.
And then buy it online.
Yeah. It's so sad. Like I went to get some, I was telling a friend the other day, I went to get some Long Johns, at a military Army Navy surplus store, and I got some, and then the lady was like, yeah, we're closing down. These young kids, they just come in and take pictures and they order from Amazon. I was like, uh-huh. Jesus Christ.
It's like a physical catalog.
Yeah.
So you can actually touch and feel.
What about Sorry to Bother You? That trailer just
Ooh.
That just came Ooh. Out yesterday. The trailer.
Did you watch it?
I watched the trailer. It looks good. Okay. I'm a Lakeith Stanfield fan. Ever since Short Term 12, I was I was like, this dude's, he's got the chops. And
same. Yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite films of 2013. That year? Yeah. Because, you know, like, my friends get on me for me liking the white starlets, like a Haley Lou Richardson. I like I like to track them like I used to track, like, college basketball and football prospects.
Hey, if they're good, they're good.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought that Brie Larson was fantastic in that movie, but she just didn't get, I guess she just, that movie just was a small film. But
a little bit.
Yeah.
But, now she's Marvel-less.
Yeah. She's, that should be interesting. Better. Speak on that film. Like, just give everybody like an early preview of that. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, so like I said, going into the movies, anything that was picked up by A24 and anything that has a director or actor, actress that I like, booked it. I had no idea what Sorry to Bother You was about, but just like you, ever since that scene where he raps and cries in the movie in Short Term 12, I was like, Stan and Stanfield, that's what I'm going to become on this man.
Yeah.
Then Get Out, and he was also in a movie called Crown Heights that came from Sundance last year.
What'd you think of that?
I like Crown Heights. The problem was that they didn't let me in, so I missed like a quarter of the movie, and that really upset me.
Okay.
Yeah, I had like arrived late or something, but I thought it was a decent movie. I hate how they pushed it out again. Another one that came out like in streaming, and then it gets buried.
Yeah, because it was out for like 5 minutes, and then then it's like on it, but it is on Amazon Prime. And he puts in a solid performance, but I was just kind of like,
What did you think of the accent?
It's better than my girl J Law and Red Sparrow. I didn't.
Come on, yeah.
I wasn't mad at it.
Right, but Sorry to Bother You. Yeah, go in there and I sit and I experiencing it. So you've seen the trailer, and I don't want to spoil it to too many people because I am one of those that I feel like experiencing the movie just like that without knowing. I would just call it the white voice.
Sure.
I was like, what the heck? Are they going to run with this? And there was a scene where they compare it. They're like, you have to have your white voice. He's like, well, your white voice. He's like, yeah, not your white voice, like Will Smith white voice. Jada's in the crowd. Jada's watching this movie because she's one of the jurors.
Okay.
She gets the biggest laugh out of that line because everyone's like aware that she's there.
Oh, wow.
And then they say that scene, right? It's like, oh, not your white voice like Will Smith, but like your white voice. And then Jada just goes, huh. And everyone's like, oh, okay, we can laugh. The movie, again, you had just said the line that, you know, it's probably a cliche. A lot of people see it. It's something like I've never seen before.
Yeah.
I didn't say that line. Other people did. I'm just confirming they are 1,000% correct. This movie is so weird. And weird is definitely the way to call it. It goes in so many directions. I thought that the comedy was pure genius. The whole thing is like a metaphor. Maybe you picked up a little bit on it in the trailer about like what you have to be successful. But the moment that you're successful, the people that were with you at the bottom don't see you as like something to congratulate, but as a sellout, as a traitor. And I'm definitely one of those with shows like BoJack Horseman, Zootopia, stuff like that. The more that you distance yourself from like humanity in a sense, the more that you're able to make a show so absurd or movie so absurd. I think that's when you can really tackle a message.
Yeah, because it looked like it had like a Be Kind, Rewind, Michelle Gondry vibe, like fun, interesting, and like it's going to take you on a journey. And just having those actors like Tessa Thompson and Lakeith,
fantastic.
There, it's like I'm there. Like you don't have to tell me anything.
I'm super curious to see what you think about it because. For me, you know, like when you're seeing a movie and it's so out there, it's either you're gonna vibe with it or you're not.
Right.
For me, like 30 minutes in, I'm like, I am all in, and I accepted everything it gave me. And I am telling you, it gets weird. That we can talk for an hour and you can spit me ideas, and you're never gonna guess where this thing goes because I don't even think they knew where it was going while filming it.
I usually like when I don't know, like watching Thoroughbreds yesterday.
You don't know, right?
It was just like, I don't know where this is going, but I'm along for the ride.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
I'm hoping that when you watch it, you feel the same way, because some other people who I knew at Sundance were like, I just wasn't with it. Mm. And it's that same thing. By the 25, 30 minute mark, you know if you're with it or if you're not. I was, and other people who I really respect their opinions, they were like, wasn't for me. Hmm. But I'm super curious because I loved it. It was in my top five.
God forbid, from Sundance. God forbid a movie does something different, you know?
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. Yeah. So, and one of the things that really put me over the edge to reach out to you was your analysis on Annihilation, because I was excited to see it. And if Black Panther wasn't in the picture, this was right behind Black Panther. And
gotcha.
Because I really loved Ex Machina, and I like Alex Garland, the way he tells these stories. I call his stories like these Icarus movies where you try to create and you fly a little too close to the sun, and then you end up just kind of burning and getting your shit all messed up. But when I watched Annihilation, it just stayed with me, and I was like, I like this movie. And then, like, you, the way that you broke it down was so, like, masterful. I was just like, oh, yeah, he saw this other stuff. I was like, oh, God. And I shared it with a bunch of other friends that had seen the movie, and they were like, well, I don't know about this one. I was like, watch this YouTube clip. And they were like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, somebody like me was just like I consider myself to be, I think I'm a smart guy, but I would never say that I'm just like, oh, I understand the theories of everything in this film. And I like to know what people like you have to say about things. And it puts things.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. And it puts things into perspective for me. So when you go into a movie, I just kind of want to get behind the curtain a little bit. When you go into a movie like Annihilation, are you watching it as you just say, are you watching this as I'm seeing this Natalie Portman movie? Let's see what happens. Are you going in there with a pen and a pad? Are you seeing it multiple times before you come up with your theories and make up your and do your videos? How what's the process like for you?
So recently, I take a pen and paper everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. I'm like looking around at literally all the things that I have. Patreon gave me a little notebook to take notes on. I have this like life thing, like journal that's already gone. At Sundance, they gave me a little thing to take notes on. But recently my girlfriend gave me, this thing called an Everlast Rocket Book. This is not a sponsorship. They're not sponsored or anything.
Okay.
Everlast Rocket Book Notebook. It's pretty much an erasable notebook.
Wow.
Weird thing. I would recommend anyone who does take notes, check it out. So it's got like, it's thin, it's portable. You write on it, take your notes, really big spacious notepad, and then I can erase it. But I can also take the notes, a picture of them, and send it to my OneNote, Dropbox, Google Drive. So if that's like behind the curtains as I get. Rocket Book, notebook, that's what I take. Mm-hmm. I write my notes, and I pretty much just jot down anything while I'm watching the movie. Anything from like, that tattoo on her arm.
Yeah.
I know that's an Ouroboros. Let me just write that down and jot it whenever I see it, right? Mm-hmm. But I also like jotting down notes like, you know, when you're watching a movie, and not to be super disruptive, but when you go with someone, you see something, and you just like say a little joke or you say a little comment. I like writing all that down so I can look back at my notes and be like, how did I experience the movie, right? Because it's like when you sit in a class. The class can be like an hour long. You're only going to retain like 15 minutes of what was said. So for a movie that's been worked on for months upon months upon months, I've never been one that by the time that the credits roll, right? This movie that has like 4,000 people on it or 400, however much it is, that's been worked on for over 6 months. And 6 seconds after it's over, you hear people go, it was good. I was like, I don't know. Even with bad movies, I'm like, I still want to give them a little credit. So when I first watch a movie, I'm just there to fully enjoy it. Sure. I'm there to fully enjoy it. And I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I see movies like Annihilation, and I'm like, I'm not wowed. But I know better than to that's why I don't want to release, or I've learned to not release videos super early, like the Annihilation one. Mm-hmm. I release it like on a Monday. So I give it like a good 4 days since I've seen the movie to sit with it. Always watch it again. Anytime I do an explained video, I've seen the movie at least two or three times. And I just dive into interviews upon interviews upon interviews, a bunch of behind the scenes. I just read up as much because I want to give the filmmaker that much respect since they put all that work into the movie. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to make an explained video, I want it to be a little bit more than just my opinion, which of course will be sprinkled in there, but what they had to say about it.
Right.
Because there's just a thing with the film universe where like a filmmaker isn't allowed to say their own thoughts in a movie. They have to just let the movie speak for itself, which I get, but I'm like, I don't know. If I made a movie, I would want to tell people like, y'all missing this part right here, and it's really important. But for whatever reason, you've been in Q&As, right? Like whenever someone asks the questions, well, what did the ending mean or what's that? And they always say, it's up to interpretation. But I'm always curious, but what is yours, right? I want to know a little bit in your mind. And that's why I go into like just a bunch of research and try to figure out what were they really trying to say? What are the scenes that other people are missing? What are the scenes that I missed the first time I watched it? So that's why the first time that I see a movie, I'm just trying to enjoy it, jot down little notes. Then I read up on it a whole bunch and I go back and I watch the movie again. And this time as intently as can be. I'm trying to see everything possible, trying to get different interpretations, perspectives. And many times I make explained videos where it's not my favorite movie. Annihilation I actually do like, but explained videos where even if I don't like the movie, I still think there's a lot to learn from it. And I know that somebody else out there, it's going to hit them.
Right.
I know that it's somebody else's favorite movie of the year. And I want to have that discussion with them as a film fan.
Yeah, no, that's great, man, because with a movie like Annihilation, after watching your video, I just happened to be in the city and I was going to go see a play and I had enough time to just kill some time. And because I have MoviePass, I want to get your thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm.
But because I have MoviePass, I said, oh, why don't I just go see Annihilation again and just see what else I can find in there. But I was just like, yeah, it's like Arturo was right, like about a lot of this stuff. Because my takeaway just from the initial, like I've discussed the movie on the show before, but we kind of spoiled whatever. But it was the fact that the thing that carried me through the movie was that these people, they were broken people, and they really didn't have anything else to lose. So why not go into the shimmer?
Mm-hmm.
And try to figure things out. But then your video was like, okay, this is about a marriage and the deterioration of a marriage and what happens when two people go apart and everything like that. And then you showed that clip of Oscar Isaac. He spoiled the movie. And you could see Natalie Portman looking over at him like, what the fuck are you doing?
Thank you. Man, the moment I do this a lot, right? Like I'll cover a movie and I'll say it, but sometimes I don't have that, right? Like I can say something and tell you like 1,000% this is clearly what the director was going for. But they're like, I don't know. I'm like, I see what I need to do. I need to find that clip where they spill the beans.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment I saw Oscar spill the beans, I'm like, yes, 1,000%.
Right. Now, how did you feel about the movie about Alex Garland not adhering to the novel? It's like he said, oh, it's like a memory of the novel.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about that? Just in general, we'll start with how, like in general, like adaptations, do they have to be by the book for you? Or what did you, and then what did you think of Garland's interpretation from the novel to the screenplay?
Yeah. So my girlfriend had read the book. Okay. So she's watching the movie and she's like, none of this is in the book. Like half of this is in the book. And I'm like, what? So then I hear, as he said, it was a dream of the book.
Yeah.
In a sense. And I was like, at first, that kind of upset me. I'm like, boy, you're not even going to try? Hmm. Like, just reread it, you know, pay respects to things. So at first I was like upset. And then the more I look into it, right? Him saying that the best part that he liked about the book was the emotion of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm kind of feeling you. It's sort of like when you watch a movie from when you were younger and you thought it was the most magical thing in the world. You rewatch it again, you go, well, it's kind of dumb. But there was an emotion that you had when you first experienced it. So seeing as that was the theme of the movie, right?
Yeah.
That's what he was going for in that whole dreamlike state. I was like, okay. And then of course, having the author say that he gave him the go, then I'm 1,000% for it, right?
Oh, and I didn't even know that. Did you mention that in the clip? Maybe I just didn't. I didn't remember that.
So I think I showed a little bit of a clip, but I also do have at the end of the video. I do it for my patrons, that I also it should still be unlisted. It's pretty much a little clip. It's not a little clip. It's all of my notes that didn't fit into the video. Mm-hmm. 12 minutes of it. Okay. So it's all the interview segments that I've seen from all the hours of footage, and I compiled a 12-minute compilation. So you can click that, and within that, in that video, there is one where he's sitting with the author.
Okay.
And him and the author talk about how he gave him permission to do it.
Oh, okay. So nobody should be mad anymore.
There you go. Yeah, 1,000%. The moment, right? The moment that the person who made the book gives permission, you kind of have to go with it. You may not like it.
Yeah.
But he got permission, so yeah, I thought that was cool because he pretty much and the author agreed with it. He said, he's like, there's no way you're going to replicate it fully. Mm-hmm. So by trying and failing, that's actually more disrespectful to the book than going off your own vision.
Yeah, I think that when I really started to be nerdy about films, I was about 18 or 19, so it's like 20 years ago. Ugh. But but I remember maybe Election coming out, and I knew that that was
a great one.
That was an adaptation, and he and Alexander Payne said it in Nebraska when the book took place in Jersey, and there's a lot of different things he changed here and there.
Yeah,
and then like maybe the Virgin Suicides. The Virgin Suicides, like Jeffrey Eugenides, there was a deleted scene. There was a featurette on the DVD where Sofia Coppola is reading from the novel, and it syncs up, like the scene kind of syncs up to everything that the book is telling you and all this stuff. And like I remember, and then another movie like The Ice Storm, one of my favorite films, where like there was not that much that the movie just kind of left stuff unsaid, and it made me want to read the novel, and I read the novel and it was amazing. But I wasn't mad at, you know, I wasn't mad. Oh, how come you guys didn't?
Yeah. I mean, The Shining itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kubrick and, King, they went back and forth about all the changes that Kubrick made. King did not like it. Mm. That's The Shining, you know, like people hold The Shining so high as a movie, but Stephen King was like, nah. And in the 90s, he like remade it. And no one even knows that he remade it, but he remade it out of spite. Yeah. He was like, no, you changed my book completely. I'm going to be really upset. But yeah, it all depends. I always say it's the execution. I don't care if it's a remake. I don't care if it's a sequel. I don't care if it's an adaptation that changes everything. Is the execution of this new movie done well?
Gotcha.
And I think it was.
Now, where did this start for you? Your love of film. Did you grow up in Chicago? Like, what was
Blockbuster, man? Blockbuster, man.
Yeah,
1,000% Blockbuster. We had the $39.99 monthly pass, which is like crazy when you think about it. But $39.99 monthly pass, and you can rent two movies at a time. Mm-hmm. But you can go in there. So we would wake up like. Blockbuster open at 10 or 11. We would go and like get the two movies, right? Watch them, right? So 4 hours later, we're back at Blockbuster. We switch those two movies out, watch those, go back to Blockbuster, right? So we were like watching movies complete galore. We'd watch everything that was released because, you know, like the outer section of the Blockbuster had like all the new releases
right
up against the walls. So once we had just watched all of them, we then went into those middle aisles, right? The middle aisles, they're just like, those are old movies, right? The five-day rentals, who cares about those? But once you watched everything that was already newly released, I was like, all right, I gotta go watch some of the older stuff. And I remember it clearly. I was probably a freshman or a sophomore in high school when I had asked the guys who were working there at the Blockbuster when they were still around. I said, hey, you know, we've watched everything. What are some like recommendations over here? Because there's like so many of these older movies, which ones? And I remember he gave me a list. He said Shawshank, Memento, 12 Angry Men, and there was like a good 10 movies. And I remember watching those movies, and like I had been obsessed with movies since I was a kid, right? When my dad was still around, we would go to the movies and we would just watch a bunch of movies at the theater, right? My dad was like, "All right, here's the plan. We're gonna pay for this one ticket." I was a kid, right? So I am absolved of all sin. But we would watch one movie. He knew exactly where the next theater was playing the movie and how to sneak in there for the showtime. And this is before reserved seating, so I'd be like, "All right, Dad, I'm just gonna follow you." And we would watch so many. And whenever it was a rated R movie, because of course my dad was such an idol, he would go see the rated R movie by himself. And I still remember watched Finding Nemo 7 times in theaters while he was watching like Bad Santa and I don't know what else. Yeah. And I guess that's where the obsession for movies came in. Mm-hmm. Blockbuster, of course, propelled that as I just continued watching more movies. But it was that week, freshman or sophomore year, that week where I binged all those older movies like Shawshank and Memento and The Prestige.
Are you comfortable with saying how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 24.
Okay, yeah, because you're super young. Like when you say Memento is old. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't mean old. I just mean
I know
like,
what you mean.
Like,
I know what you mean. No, exactly. But it's funny though. But like it's funny to me. That's all. It's
yeah, because 12 Angry Men, that's an older movie. Yeah, Memento isn't really that much, but yeah. But going in there and just watching all those movies that I wouldn't have known of, right? Yeah. IMDb at that point was popping, sure. Right? That was when the 250 list was like the most important thing in the world, mm-hmm. to people. And I just remember that one week where I watched those recommendations that guy gave me, and I started watching everything that I could off that 250 list. And what surprised me was that I used to just see movies as entertainment, but I remember watching movies like Shawshank and Memento and going, how is it that I can't go to the bathroom right now, right? Yeah. If I go to the bathroom, I'm going to miss something. And I wasn't used to that. Mm-hmm. A movie where every single scene meant something, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, wait a minute. And then I got obsessed with how the movies were made. And from there, that's where it just spawned off, right? I was just so obsessed. I'm like, what? There's the camera people. And I understood what the clapper was. And then I understood the continuity. And then when I learned camera angles, that when a camera's looking down on a character, that's why I'm feeling like they're weak. When mm-hmm. a camera's looking up on a camera, then I understood the manipulation of film. And I was just, that did it for me. So watching movies is literally where I learned it from. A lot of people say go to film school, which it's good. It's great. You can network. Mm-hmm. But just watching movies and seeing how they're made alone,
yeah,
was my biggest thing.
And so when did you get into like the film criticism and your YouTube? How did that start for you? Because it's how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, so I started in 2013. Started it 2013 May 13th 2013. It was 2 days after my birthday, because my birthday is May 11th. And I started up the channel because I was really inspired from like other people, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever I saw a movie, the first thing you want to do, like you were saying earlier, is you want to find other people who have seen that movie.
Yeah.
So for myself, seeing the movies weekly, people weren't going to see them until they were like released in theater or in DVD or whatever. I was like, but I like that. So I would go online and I would see videos from strangers who were talking about the movie, because that's the only way that I would be able to like vent and talk about it, comment on it, because none of my friends were watching them. So seeing that, I became like obsessed with that idea. And I said, okay, but they haven't covered this movie yet and this movie yet. So then that's when I decided, if I'm already watching all these movies, why not create a channel where I discuss it the same way that I look forward to seeing other people discuss the movies? And it started off as reviews. Originally I was called AZ Reviews. Okay. Or ATZ Reviews. So the whole point is my name is Arturo Zurita, so it was AZ. And it was sort of like a play on A to Z, because I was covering everything from A to Z.
Gotcha.
Also, I couldn't get a hyphen in 2013, so that's where the T came in. So it was supposed to be like an A to Z. But it took a couple of years until I realized that I wasn't so much concerned about reviews, right? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't really care about the idea of telling someone, don't watch this or do watch this.
Yeah.
Or having to tiptoe over spoilers. This movie's really good, but I can't tell you why, because I don't want to spoil it. Right. Yeah, and I was like, forget sure. that. Mm-hmm. So then the whole like explanation style of it, I became super obsessed with. I became super obsessed going back to that week, sophomore year, where I wanted to know, why did I love this movie? Why did it make me feel the way it made me feel? And that's when I changed my channel into being that, for like things like Annihilation, things for like Nocturnal Animals, and just adding more to the film talk than just this movie was good.
Right.
This movie was bad.
Yeah, dude, and it's great, and I really love what you do, man.
Appreciate that.
Before we get out of here, I want to get your thoughts on, because you mentioned Blockbuster being so pivotal in your growth as a movie watcher, film critic, and all that good stuff. How do you feel about the end, like that ending? Is it just like, because I've said, yeah, I've said this hundreds of times. I used to have a guy at Blockbuster, you know, uh-huh. Like I used to have a guy that would say, hey, you like this movie. Why don't you check out this one?
Right. You yes.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the dudes.
Yeah. And it's like, you like Michelle Williams in this. Why don't you check out Mammoth, this Gael Garcia Bernal movie.
Yep.
Oh, my God, dude. Like that, you know, just like I probably would have found it eventually, but I don't know, man. It's just, it's not the same. So is it just that we have guys like you on YouTube that we can go to now? Is that the substitution?
I feel, I'd be glad if I'm considered that, but yeah, I kind of feel that way because you're right. Like I was saying, before I started my channel, I was introduced to so many movies from people on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. Who were covering something and then would mention this other movie that I would have never thought to see, right? So it's like the thing from Sundance. Like we were talking about Columbus earlier. Some people don't even know Columbus exists. Some people may not know, you know, a bunch of the movies that are coming out that they even exist. And that's when I went, one, I want to be that Blockbuster dude. Yeah. My dream was like, man, I want to grow up and work at Blockbuster.
Nah, I feel you, but, man. Nah,
right?
Nah,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know what? The next big thing is to just be that Blockbuster recommendation guy, but on YouTube, right? Yeah,
right.
So to just like recommend those movies that are coming out, going to those film festivals for people who can't go, but to still like watch all the movies. And I watch a lot of bad movies. Yeah. I watch movies that I know are going to be bad. Like I just know it's not for me, but I give them the benefit of the doubt. Right. And when I talk about them, it's to kind of be like, look, it didn't work for me, but this is somebody's favorite movie of the year out there. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, perhaps that's where I get a lot of recommendations from. It's that word of mouth.
Yeah. You're also one of the few people that even mentioned Brigsby Bear.
I'm so glad. Yeah. Man, they don't need to pay me. I will advertise that movie for the rest of my life.
It's a good flick, man. I have like a Patreon page where it's, a lot of times I'll call it Indie Movie Corner, where I discuss a movie like Columbus and Brigsby Bear on there.
That's dope.
I want to get your thoughts before we wrap up on MoviePass. Are you in the cult? How do you feel about it? How is it going to shape movie watching? Is it going to do it?
So I don't have MoviePass right now, right? Because okay. they kicked me out.
Why did they kick you out?
So I had like tweeted it out, right? They had sent me a thing because I've had a MoviePass. I guess I would just go through my thing with MoviePass. Okay. I got MoviePass back in 2013, 2012.
Okay.
Wow. 2012, actually. That's exactly when I got it, 2012. I remember back when MoviePass was like freaking the link card. It was like food stamps. Because they actually gave you like coupons to go redeem tickets.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was MoviePass back in the day. And then they turned it into the credit card that it is now. It was a Discover card at one point. I believe now it's a MasterCard.
Yeah.
And it's how it works now. You know, you get it. And I was paying $35.99. That's how much it was back in the day. A month, $35.99, which is fine because I was literally watching a movie a day. And I was watching so many. Mm-hmm. At that point, that was in our minds was, how the heck is this possible?
Right?
Mm-hmm. So then MoviePass at one point ends up boosting up the price to $99. It was like this whole thing that they went through, this whole like change in management and whatever else. And they pretty much just blocked everyone who was overusing the card unless they paid $99. So there was like a year that I didn't use MoviePass, right? But I was like, man, I remember I used to tell this to everyone. It's $35, but trust me, you like in three movies, it's paid for.
Yeah.
Right. And then MoviePass comes back and makes this resurgence that it's been doing now. And I was wondering how they were going to survive only charging $35. Then these dudes come out with a
$9.99. Mm-hmm.
I was like, what the heck?
Now it's $7.95 now.
And now it's $7.95. Now, they have said that the whole point is because they're like getting a bunch of data. And I'm gonna be honest, I'm not that much of a, I don't cover my camera on the computer. If the FBI wants to stalk me, I don't care, whatever. Make a movie about me. So I don't really care about the whole data thing that they've been talking about, that they're selling the data of their users and that's how they've been getting money. I'm like, I guess. I feel like they're already taking our data. Whatever, that's a whole other scenario. They have been saying that they want to end up striking deals with movie theaters because the more people that go to the theater, the more that they'll be able to increase revenues in a sense.
Right, with concessions and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At Sundance, they bought a movie. MoviePass bought a movie they're going to distribute. It's called American Animals. So they're trying to get into the actual game of producing and distributing movies. So I don't really know what their whole plan is, but I think it's very interesting, and I'm super curious because MoviePass was one of the main reasons before I was making revenue on YouTube that allowed me to be able to go see so many movies.
Yeah.
Big thing I will say, like I said, I don't have it right now because my girlfriend and I watch the same movie. So she has her own MoviePass. I have my MoviePass. My MoviePass got canceled. Hers didn't. So having been with them since 2012, I've seen this before, that when people overuse the card, AKA use it for the way that it's marketed to, their terms allow them to be able to cancel you and they don't have to show proof or anything. So I like tweeted it out and everyone's like, nah, dude, you misused. We don't trust you. You're suspicious. But I was like, hey, whatever. Then a news article comes out. There's a whole news report about all these elderly ladies who were kicked out of MoviePass.
Uh-oh.
And they were like, yeah, they cut us out. And like the one thing they had in common was that they all used it at least 4 to 5 times a week. That they all kept their tickets just like I kept my tickets. So that's the only thing that I've been saying. And I really don't like the new yearly thing. Because I feel like they're still a business, and I like them. I always recommend them, right? $9, watch one movie it's already made up for.
Right.
But signing up for a year, and then, like I said, I got kicked out, but my girlfriend didn't know we watched the same movies. We keep the same ticket stubs. We have everything accorded for, but I've seen it before. I've been with them for a long time. They can kick you out. So if you're signing a year-long contract, and their terms say they can kick you out at any point, shoot. So, or if they kick you out and then they're banking the rest of the money, you know what I mean?
So you think the bubble's going to burst?
I hope it doesn't burst. I wish they would have kept it monthly because even with me being kicked out, I still highly recommend it. $9?
Yeah.
One movie is paid for.
How much is a movie ticket in Chicago now?
$11.50 is usually for the AMCs, $11.50s. So, yeah.
It's like 15 here in New York.
Oh, New York. Yeah, I was in New York during the winter. Crazy.
Yeah, like for when I went to see.
Disrespectful.
It's crazy, man. When I went to see Annihilation the second time, it was like $17. I was like, no. Thank God for movie pass.
No.
The AMC Stubbs points help, but I mean.
That's, 1,000%. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Well, Arturo, I got to have you back on, man. This is.
Hey, for sure. It was fun.
This is too much fun to have you on, and we got to get you back on and talk some more movies and stuff. But tell everybody, I'll post the links and everything in the show notes, but tell everybody where they can find you.
Gotcha. You can find me at The ATZ Show. If you're British, it's ATZ, I believe. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. But of course, I'm mainly on YouTube. I do a lot of film discussions over there. So if you ever want to talk about movies, comments on any video, and probably I'll link you to whatever video I made. But just movies in general, that's my big passion. And some music in there that I sprinkle in. But The ATZ Show.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, man. Hold on to the line for a bit. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Take it easy.